Hey, this is Bridget Danner from Women's Wellness Radio. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to another great episode. We've got something a little different today. So I'm doing a Throwback Thursday on a Tuesday. I'm bringing back an episode I recorded about year and a half ago on my first podcast, which was a fertility podcast. But there were some really great gems of information that apply to all kinds of women. And this particular recording is with Allison Golden of Paleo Non Paleo, and she really gives great information about adapting to a new diet or, trying to go paleo. What is paleo? And I thought that we should bring it back and let you guys check it out. So I hope you enjoy it. And one more announcement is that I just have created a survey for our audience. And we'd love to have you take it. So just to let us know a little bit more about you, what are you interested in? What kind of topics would you like? It's pretty quick, and as a thank you gift, we're going to give you a free product we created on how to chart your cycle. So charting your cycle is a great way to find out more about what your cycle's doing and what it's not doing and where your hormones may be off. So you can hop on over to bridgetdanner.com to grab that free gift and enjoy today's interview. Thanks a lot.
So a little bit more about Allison. Again, she has a website called paleononpaleo.com that you can check out, and there's a free gift on there. She's also a life coach. She practices tea tapping, and she's the author of The Modern Nonsense Guide to Paleo, which was Amazon bestseller on the day it launched and nominated as health and fitness. And her website was nominated as Health and Fitness Blog You Should Be Reading by Mark Sisson at Mark's Daily Apple. She also has a degree in organizational behavior, which helped her kind of understand eating behaviors, and that's kind of some of what informed what she'll share with us today. She's also the mother of twin boys, and she lives in California via London, I just found out. So welcome, Allison.
Hi. Hi, Bridget. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Sure, yeah, really happy to have you. And do you want to just give an overview of what you want to hit on today?
Well, I come from a background of systems analysis and systems organization. You mentioned that I have a degree in organizational behavior, and that's really about looking for obstacles to organizational growth and bottlenecks, and working on strategies to overcome them so that organizations can really grow and fulfill their potential. And I noticed when I had twins, and I noticed very similar issues about managing a family and managing a life when you have twins, that I had seen in my business career. And came to the conclusion, well, of course, a family is an organization in just the same way, and so we are as individuals too. We're an organized body, and when I started looking at my diet and my own eating habits and those of my children, I started to apply some of the principles that I learned, and really saw how important it is for us to create healthy systems in our environment and good habits, because the world around us is not, you're working counterculture. When you want to eat healthily over the long term, sustaining healthy eating habits, you're working against the culture, which is not going that way. And so you really have to put systems in place in your life to enable you to withstand the pull of the dominant culture. And so that's really where I come from. I'm looking at ways, modeled in my own life, first of all, and then I write about them and get feedback from my readers. But what I'm looking for all the time is to develop strategies and habits that allow us as individuals and families to withstand the dominant culture and eat the way that we want to for our own good health.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's like you said, it's so easy in our culture to just kind of get swept up in, oh, we're all busy, so we should all just go through the drive-through and, you know, bake a frozen pizza, and that's the best we can do. But there's definitely this whole, like you said, counterculture of people living another way. So if you, you know, you're listening to this show because you're in the fertility camp, you know, there might be some habits you want to change, and you just could use some tools on how to do it successfully. You know, you may have happened upon the show even if you're not in the fertility camp because you're interested in paleo and you saw the title. So I think it's going to, you know, apply for anybody who's really willing to make a change. So that's great. So Allison, before we get into some of your ideas on systems for healthy eating, could you talk a little bit about your family's kind of transition into healthy eating and why you did it and what you found?
Sure. Well, it sort of really goes back to my own birth, actually. Now, when I sort of look at it that way, you know, I was always a child that got sick. You know, I got all the childhood illnesses, and then I was constantly on antibiotics. I had my tonsils out when I was 7, and then, you know, hormonal and acne problems in my teens, and then I developed endometriosis and infertility in my mid-20s. And it just went on and on and on. And I was able to conceive eventually through IVF, and I had my twin boys. Then 4 years after that, I decided to do IVF again and got pregnant, but I lost the pregnancy in my 5th month. And this followed fairly rapidly after my both my boys were premature, they were premature, but both of them were seriously ill just before I lost my pregnancy. And, you know, at the time when you know, one of my boys got meningitis, and then 3 months later my second boy got mono and then an abscess and had to have emergency surgery to prevent himself from suffocating himself. And I said to the doctor at the time, I said, you know, what's going on? These two situations are very, very rare. And she just said to me, you're just unlucky. Well, when I lost the pregnancy and I held this tiny little baby, 1 pound baby in my arms, I just thought to myself, this is not bad luck. This is way more than bad luck. There is something systemic going on here in our family, and I really need to get to the bottom of it. So that was what really started to sort of make me think about, okay, I've spent all my life up to this point, and I was 40 at that point, you know, doing the mainstream thing, going to the doctors, taking the medication, managing the symptoms, but never really getting to the root of the problem. And I'd sort of heard over the years that, you know, diet was important, but never really took it on board. There was some denial going on and just some, I don't want to just make these changes. I do remember very clearly when I was going through IVF that one doctor in the Bay Area where I live was advising her patients to change their diet and still finding a lot of resistance, even amongst patients who had really struggled to get pregnant, were spending a lot of money. And so I could, you know, identify and see in myself and in other people that our resistance to changing our eating habits is very, very strong. However, what really put me over the edge and really made me start looking at eating was when one of my sons was in first grade, and he was just having tremendous behavioral issues. I mean, really was disrupting our family life, was causing huge problems at school. He was a very bright boy and could do the work, but he just couldn't manage himself to follow the procedures at school, and was manifesting itself in very, really antisocial behaviors that were inappropriate. And it was then that I really had nowhere to turn. The doctors couldn't help me, and the teachers couldn't help me, and I just felt very alone with this child, and wondering what on earth was going to happen to our lives in the future if this was going to continue. And somehow, somewhere, all this information in our family history came together and made me think I really seriously need to look at food. And at the time, it wasn't like I knew that there would be an answer in food. It was more that, what else could I do? You know, this was something that I could do, and I needed to take control of a situation that I felt out of control of. And so I started researching, and the more I researched, the more I became convinced that it was the source of all these problems was the same thing, and that was the diet that we were eating. And we didn't eat a terrible diet, but we didn't eat a great diet. I don't love cooking. I still don't love cooking, actually. And we did eat, you know, a fair amount of processed food. I'm, you know, English, and much like the American diet, there's a lot of wheat in our diet, and dairy. And so what I did with my son was I really started to work hard on removing certain things and identifying what was going on for him, and found after a while that I could really affect his behavior, and that I could feed him something and it would turn him into, you know, a Dr. Jekyll, and I could feed him something else and it would turn him into Mr. Hyde, or maybe it's the other way around, I'm not sure, Dr. So, and how powerful it was and how quick it happened. Literally, I could sort of almost experiment on him and you know, give him some grapes, and he would just explode within a few minutes. And then I could give him a hard-boiled egg, and it would calm him right down. So it was a terrible thing to have to go through, to be honest. But it was hugely informative. And because he has a twin who was not like this at all, it was also very interesting to see the differences in the two boys, based on, you know, them eating the same thing. So that really convinced me. But then, you know, we were on our own. There was no one else, you know, certainly no one else doing this. And so very few people even believed it when I talked about it. And so in the end, what I did, and I couldn't control what was happening and what he was eating outside the home, so we homeschooled for 3 years. And that gave me more time to really work on his diet. And what I think in reflection happened was that he had a lot of medication due to his prematurity. He then had massive amounts of medication when he was so ill with mono and his surgery. And he definitely got worse after that. And I think that, you know, produced a leaky gut situation, and the combination of that and his diet really required us to work over a fair amount of time, actually, to heal his gut and get him to the place he is now, where really he's an A student. He's active in his local theater. He's very popular. He's athletic, you know, he's really a fantastic kid. And, you know, if you told me 5-6 years ago that we would be in this place, I would have been, that would have been all my dreams come true all in one point. So, you know, I'm absolutely convinced through my own personal experience with him that, you know, diet is hugely important, incredibly powerful, far more powerful than we give it credit for. And that we really have to work for the sake of our families and our own health, but really our families, because they are the next generation, to feed them well, feed them good food, and instill good eating habits at an early age, so that hopefully they will carry those into their adulthood, even if they have moments or periods in their life when they don't follow what you've brought them up on. But maybe at some point in time they will hit a block for themselves and go, you know, mum was right, I really need to, you know, stop eating these Diet Cokes or drinking these Diet Cokes and eat a more healthful diet. That's what I'm hoping for anyway.
Yeah, that's a great story. Thanks so much for sharing. And, you know, I want to kind of highlight, sometimes when we're trying to get pregnant and we think, okay, I have to make some changes, sometimes you kind of do it grudgingly, like everyone else gets to eat cupcakes, but me. But really, you know, it's a continuum of health. And here you're telling this powerful story about your son's own transformation with diet. And, you know, it's not just like, well, let me get pregnant and then I can be done with this. It's, you know, getting healthy early, ideally, so that you produce healthy sperm and egg and your child is less prone to disease, and then, you know, raising your children to eat well and letting them excel in life. So it's, you know, yeah, it's really like this generational gift, so to speak.
Right.
So Allison, you know, you said a lot of people are resistant to changing diet, and, you know, that's so true. I can remember the first time a naturopath told me, you know, that I really needed to cut down on carbs or cut out gluten. And I had a really emotional reaction to that, you know, mm-hmm. like, yeah. I love those things. How could you say that? And so, you know, now that I really do have low carb and, you know, almost no gluten, I realize there's still plenty of pleasure in life and in what I eat. So maybe you could talk a little bit about what you found as far as that goes.
Right. Well, you know, food has huge importance in our society. I mean, if we just think about the number of holidays we celebrate, and we always celebrate them with food, you know, there is something every month, really, if we want to follow them all. And that was something when I was first changing our diet that I realized. I was like, okay, so, well, there's Super Bowl in January, there's Valentine's Day, and in February there's often Easter in March and Mother's Day in May. You know, it goes on and on and on. So, you know, we can find so many ways to celebrate, sort of quote-unquote celebrate, with food every month if we wish. And it's how our society is based. And so, you know, for my family, one of the things I've had to do is really look at, okay, well, how do we manage all these different, you know, food situations, from the party in the classroom to our own individual birthdays to how we eat on a day-to-day basis. And I think the way I've done it and been able to change our diet is by doing it gradually. I didn't really have the skills to start with to make it sustainable, and we were a bit spotty in the beginning. We sort of do it for a little while, and then we fall off the wagon, and we get back on it again, and, you know, we go back and forth. And then after a while, I started to sort of see these habits and these things, these elements in our system, in our family lifestyle, that, you know, we could just tweak and change to make things go a lot more smoother and to make it more sustainable. And the way I see eating habits, it's changing our eating habits and the way we eat over the long term is a skill. And I think it's very important to understand that it's a skill. And we adopt this new way of eating in the same way that we adopt any skill, which is over time. We become better at it over time with consistency and consistent practice. And, you know, we don't just get in the car and drive. We go through that process gradually. And in my book, I talk about the curve, which is, you know, we start off not knowing how to drive, but we don't need to know how to drive because, you know, we're children or whatever. And we're quite confident and happy in that. And then we get to the point where, okay, we get to an age where we're allowed to drive, and we start to learn. And just like any skill, we go through this terrible experience of just, I'm never going to do this, I can't get it, this is beyond me. And we get down on ourselves and depressed. And then if we are well motivated, we keep pushing through that point. And often when we, you know, driving is so important to us, and the benefits of learning to drive are very important and can, you know, really be life-changing, we keep at it, and we suddenly it starts to come, and our depression lifts, and we start to get more confident. And then with consistent practice, our ability to drive is so automatic that it goes into our unconscious, and we don't have to think about it, and our confidence is very high. And that learning process is one that we go through when we learn anything, including changing our eating habits and changing the way we eat. And so I think it's really important for people to understand that before they start, because so often we think, oh, it's going to be easy, we're going to just be determined, and this is what I'm going to eat, and I'll achieve my goal. But in fact, it doesn't work like that. There is an emotional part to the process that we tend to overlook, and we need to understand it. And so my advice to people is, apart from learning that, or understanding that process, is to take things gradually and to get better at it over time. Because just in the same way as some people will jump in a swimming pool and learn to swim that way, many of us like to go down steps and, you know, go in the shallow end and then gradually build our confidence that way. And I think there are different types of people, and there are some people that can do the jump in the deep end. But if you're somebody that's had a period or experience of trying to adopt new eating habits and falling off the wagon a lot, I think it's really important to understand that you can do these things gradually by, you know, dropping certain things rather than going cold turkey, by getting better over time, and by just looking at situations where you might consider that you failed. You may have gone to your holiday dinner and eaten six types of pie afterwards, but learning, instead of reflecting on it afterwards and go, okay, why did I eat six types of pie? That wasn't my intention. Why did I do that? And what can I do next time that will avoid falling into that trap again? And there are a number of things, there are usually a number of things that you can do to prevent yourself from doing that. So understanding that curve, that there is a learning curve, that you are going to hit blocks and things are not going to go smoothly, but to keep on, because the benefits of eating healthfully are life-changing. I mean, if your problem is that you've not been able to get pregnant partly because of your diet, then, and you can undo that, I mean, how more life-changing could that be? You go from being not pregnant to pregnant and having a child. I mean, you can't imagine a more life-changing event than that. And so the motivation is high, so let's leverage that motivation, but understand that it's not always going to be easy, that there are going to be times when you feel you don't want to do it, or you're hopeless at it. But everybody feels like that at some point, and to keep pushing on regardless, because eventually, with time, you will become more and more skilled.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I often tell clients in my clinic, you know, that it is natural to kind of yo-yo for a while. And I don't know, maybe Allison, you're quite steady now, but I still kind of yo-yo sometimes. Like, you know, I'll go away for the weekend and I'm like, woohoo, I'm just going to kind of let go a little bit. And then I feel gross, you know, I get a headache and I, you know, and then I'm like, yeah, there's a reason why I eat how I eat, and I'm going back to it. So I think it's okay and human, and there's a couple exceptions. You know, we do a group cleanse at Joyful Mamas a few times a year, and, you know, while you're on a short-term cleanse, you know, let's stick to it, because it's, you know, kind of meant to be an experiment, and you need that period to eliminate certain foods to see how you react to foods when you add them back. Or, you know, if I have a 40-year-old, you know, woman who has an autoimmune disease who wants to get pregnant, yeah, there's some things you're going to have to be really strict on. But, yeah, most of us, there's a little bit of yo-yoing or you know, and it's kind of natural. And to me, my biggest reminder is when I clean up my diet and then I splurge, my body lets me know. And your body will let you know quite clearly when you've been eating clean for a while, right? So,
right. Yeah, I actually have a post on my blog, which is, you know, about why you should, I mean, the title is why you should eat junk food when you want to eat healthily. And it's for that reason, because it's the reminder. It, you know, it reminds you, and you can often, following that, recommit to a healthy diet, because you experience, you go, oh yes, now I remember, you know, I get all these aches and pains when I eat this kind of stuff. Let's get back on the wagon again.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, it's funny, on the radio show, I can't tell who's listening on the web, but if you're listening on the web and you'd like to ask a question, maybe there's something you're trying to figure out in your own path to eating better, you can call in and ask Allison. Our number is 646-716-8615. And so you have to kind of, call in, press 1 to raise your hand, and you kind of have to mute your computer so you don't get confused. But you're welcome to call in. If you'd like to, you could also, you know, write a question on my Joyful Mamas Facebook page. But we prefer you to call in and really have a conversation, so don't be shy. So you're welcome to do that. So, Allison, you told us a little bit about taking baby steps. I was going to mention, for instance, I said we do a cleanse, and something I will kind of suggest to my clients is to just pick a short-term amount of time to do something. Like, because if you say, look, to somebody who's never thought about giving up gluten, for instance, like, you know, I want you to give up gluten your whole life, it's going to sound horrific. But if you say, how about we get off gluten for 2 weeks or a month? And some people, that's too much. Some people will just say 5 days. It seems to, you know, basically every time we get that reaction that we had just discussed, which is you take it out and you either feel really good or you're not sure, but then you add it back in and you're quite sure you don't feel well. So that's often a kind of a little game or trick I do with my clients, and I do it with myself sometimes too. I'll say, okay, well, I'm going to try this for X amount of time. It makes it more doable and more of just like a fun experiment, and then and then you can kind of go from there. So that's kind of one technique I've used. You're kind of the expert on systems and ways to change. What are some other tips you've got for people?
Well, I think there's so many. I think the first place, and it's the place that we control the most, to get clean, if you like, from an eating perspective, is our homes. So the advice generally is to clear out your pantry and get rid of all the stuff that, you know, is considered for you to be on your no-eat list. And I think if you can do that, I think that's a great thing. And I totally agree with you about the gradual thing. You know, somebody once said to me, well, you've got to stop eating sugar. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I agreed to do it for a day. That was as much as I could manage at that time. And I also get people, though, saying to me, but I can't. You know, I can't empty my pantry. It's a lot of money and it's food and things like that. And also people often have families that, you know, while you may be someone who once is committed to this, the rest of the family may not be. And so I really work on getting their home straight first, but in a way that they can manage. So if you can clear out your pantry either, you know, overnight or over time, I think, you know, that's a great way to go. I suggest people make things, if they have to keep certain items in the home that they would rather they didn't eat, I suggest making them as inaccessible as possible. One of my favorite tricks was to stick everything that, like, my, you know, chocolate or whatever, in the fridge, and not in the fridge, in the freezer, in the garage. So, you know, if I wanted to have chocolate, I had to go outside and I had to wait for it to warm up a bit. Sometimes you would put things on a high shelf that was difficult to get to. You know, each time, you know, it makes it more difficult for you to have that respond to that impulse to eat, and you have to sort of go to a degree of effort in order to get it. I've even suggested to people that if other people in the family want to keep this stuff available, for them to take care of it and not tell you where it is, so you don't actually know. So my husband still likes to bring in chocolate, and although he's, you know, paleo, he likes this dark chocolate. And so I tell him he can buy it, but he has to put it somewhere and not tell me where it is. Because I can still, you know, sit there and eat a bar of chocolate on a bad day, you know, with no problem. And I don't know that that will ever change, really. So those are some of the things that I would suggest for people in the home. And then ultimately, if you can, to sort of get your home clean. And our home, apart from the chocolate I just mentioned, and even that's dark chocolate, our home is we eat at home, my family, sort of 99% paleo. There is very, very little that we eat that's not paleo. And that feels very safe. You know, that there's a real safety around the food in our house. And I have 13-year-old boys now, and you know, they just come in and just eat their way through everything in the house. But it's paleo, so I am absolutely fine with that. They eat healthy food. There's a lot of meat and vegetables. They complain a little because they say, you know, we don't have any food. Well, we have plenty of food, but you know, they say we don't have food. We have ingredients, you know, because you know it's food that they have to sort of make into a meal, maybe if it's not already ready. And of course, they would love to have, you know, wheat and sugar and so on. But you know, that's not going to happen. They can have that outside the home, but not inside the home. And then when going out, so once you've got the home environment safe, for yourself in terms of eating and food, I adopt approach of almost like a warrior approach to outside, because you are less in control of the outside environment, and that's often where people will fall down. And so my whole thing about the warrior thing is you need to anticipate. You know, you need to look at it like you're going into battle, really, and you need to anticipate the threats. And you need to develop strategies and practice them, fences against that. So if you know you're going into the office and on, you know, Friday morning, there's always donuts out in the coffee room, you need to anticipate that and work out what you're going to do to make sure that you don't succumb to those donuts. Now, it might be going to work with a full stomach so that you're not tempted by those donuts. It could be that you don't go into the coffee room. It could be that you make your drink separately. Whatever the strategy is, it's important to have it planned ahead of time, so that you know there will be times that, just like in a warrior situation, you are surprised. The element of surprise is dangerous, and so you want to remove as many possibilities for surprise as possible. But there will be times when you are surprised, and those are the times that you might succumb, or those might be the times that you can actually then draw on your willpower and grit your teeth and get through them. But if you're doing that all the time and having to rely on your willpower, it's quite likely that you will succumb more often. And that's what you want to avoid. You want to have systems and procedures and habits and tactics and strategies in place for all the different situations that you come into, so that you can overcome them. And eventually, those systems become natural to you, and you don't actually think about them anymore.
Mm. Yeah, this is great advice, Allison. Totally agreeing with this. I often tell people, have your home be your oasis of health. You know, and so if people tell me, well, I have this bad habit of eating ice cream at night when I watch TV, and I said, well, who bought the ice cream? You know,
right,
somebody left
right.
in the house. So,
yeah. I often say to people, you know, the decision about what you eat, most of the decision about what you eat is taken in the store, because once you've bought it and brought it home, then it's going to get eaten. So really think about what you're buying and really make good decisions in the store so that you don't bring it home.
That's really good advice. Yeah, and I like your advice about kind of putting the food away. It's so funny. I just had a client come in yesterday, and she said, my husband's got on this paleo kick, and he wants to throw everything out in her house, and I'm not quite ready for that. And it was this exact conversation. So I will go back to her and tell her to listen to this episode. Because, yeah, there's a compromise. Some people like to go extreme and some people don't. And, you know, you do have to kind of make a compromise in your home. My husband also gives me a hard time that there's sort of nothing to snack on at our house.
Right,
so
right.
I try to have some snacks that I think are healthy, like trail mix or something. But, yeah, there's no bags of chips, you know, in our house. So, but, you know, to me, that's, you know, I do the grocery shopping and I'm not going to make that decision.
Yeah. You bring up a really important point, and I think I get a lot of people saying, you know, I want to convert my whole family and, you know, they're not willing. And so my advice is, well, just stop trying to convert them. Just work on yourself and, you know, eat separately if you have to, but if you're the person that's in charge of the shopping and the cooking, then treat them as adults. And if they have to, if they want buns with their burgers, this is what I told my kids, if you want buns with your burgers, you have to pay for them, you have to buy them, you have to prepare them. and, you know, then it really makes them think about, you know, do I want to do this? So, you know, certainly with older children and spouses, then you can certainly do that. And I think that, you know, my husband was not paleo for 15 months before he got on, you know, the bandwagon with me. But he was, you know, probably 60% paleo simply because I was the one in charge of the cooking and the purchasing of food. But I think it does get tricky if you're not consistent. So if you are buying food for the rest of the family that's not paleo, if you're saying no and then you sort of another time will buy things for them, that, you know, you're not sending a strong message, I think that can be tricky. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, my family would never have been paleo from day one, but they've become paleo over time, you know. Very strongly. Mm.
Yeah, that kind of inspires me. My son is 5 years old, and, you know, hearing that your 13-year-old boys are, you know, eating paleo at home all the time. And, yeah, my son's the same. You know, he couldn't find his lunch bag at school, and he thought, oh, I wish I hadn't found it because they had pizza at the cafeteria. And I said, yeah, I'm sure you would have loved that. But, you know, he kind of knows, like, there's this dynamic going on, but, you know, he goes along with it.
he
tries to push the boundaries a bit. But he, you know, he also knows what mom does and doesn't want him to eat.
So. Yeah, yeah.
And like the name of your website, you know, when you're trying to live paleo or trying to just have a healthy diet in a world that's full of sugar and processed food, it is kind of this constant game you have to play, or this, like you said, this battle you have to engage in. And yeah, I love your idea of having different strategies. You know, I definitely always tell my clients, you know, be prepared, you know, and if you know you're going to, you know, a party that just has wine, cheese, and crackers, you know, you got to eat beforehand. And or sometimes bring your own. A strategy I'm going to play with more is kind of bring my own healthier treats sometimes, too, because, you know, you go to a celebration, we kind of have a joke in our family that about how much, you know, every celebration requires cake. And, you know, it's hard for me sometimes to say no. I love sweets, but if I can make my own healthier sweet thing to bring, then I'm going to probably eat it and feel good about that and feel like I still got my treat. Cool.
Well, and you know, I think you're absolutely right in doing that, and I think that's very good advice. And some more advice that just reminded me of is that I've just come back from London, where I was visiting my family over the holidays, and you know, there's obviously a lot of opportunity to eat food that's not healthy. And there are a lot of childhood foods that I don't normally have access to, so I'm sort of in this sort of scarcity situation. And that was very sabotaging to me in the early days. But one of the things that I've learned to do is to basically recreate my kitchen at home wherever we are staying. So I, you know, suggest to people that when they go on vacation, you know, wherever possible, to sort of have a situation where you're cooking your own food as much as possible, and to just buy the tools you need. So even though I go to the UK and I do visit a fair amount, but I've got my own slow cooker, my own juicer, my own pots and pans, and I just leave them behind when I go, and just leave them for the people after me that are renting the place that I'm renting. Because to me, spending, you know, I don't know, $50 on a slow cooker, which then provides me with a healthy meal when I would be going out and spending probably more than that on a restaurant food that wasn't healthy, is a good investment. And I just think that's really, you know, make your kitchen from home, even when you're away, to encourage you to eat healthily when you're out and about, even if you're in a situation where there's a lot of unhealthy food in the you know, bigger society.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. And you know, I just said to my husband, we went away for Christmas, and I didn't bring much of my own food, and I felt awful. And I said, you know, I just have to commit to bringing my cooler of food. You know, my family now is kind of used to me being weird, so I just need to commit to it, because I'm going to feel so bad. And I don't really feel guilty so much as I just feel my health feels bad. I don't think it's healthy to beat yourself up if, you know, you decide to eat a cookie, but I just don't feel right in my body, and I don't sleep well, and I get a headache. So yeah, I'm just kind of committing to buying groceries, or when you obviously you can't bring groceries to London, but when you land, you can go to a grocery store, and I love that you buy a slow cooker. That's amazing. I know a lot of people travel with like a mini blender in their suitcase. It's another good idea. It's, you know, pretty easy to make like some kind of smoothies on the road. Traveling with like nuts and veggie sticks it's easy, and I don't think it doesn't mean you have zero foods with everyone else. You know, there could be some things being cooked that you're like, oh yeah, I'll have that pork chop, and then I'm gonna, you know, create my own salad here. Does anyone want some of the salad? And you know, you just can kind of mix and match a bit so that, you know, you're still having an experience where you feel part of the group. So yeah, I love it. Well, maybe, you know, as we close up here, you've talked about your kitchen and the importance of shopping. Do you want to just elaborate on your strategies around shopping and cooking and organizing your kitchen a bit?
Right. Well, I think, you know, the most important thing is to be prepared. And I every week go through a process on Sunday, which is very simple now, of planning my meals out for the week and creating a shopping list from that. And in the early days, what I also did was my weekly shopping list was for the produce that I needed. And then I had a monthly shopping list, which I didn't. I always do mine on a Sunday. It's just my choice. The first Sunday of the month was the month that I went to buy the weekly produce, but also the monthly staples, the things that, you know, the flowers and nut flowers and things that were not so, didn't need to be quite so fresh. So that cut down the amount of time that it took me to shop dramatically. When I first started this, back when my son was having so much trouble, it took me 3 hours to do my first shop and my first grocery shop. But over time, that now it sort of takes me 20 minutes, I would think. So it's planning what I need for the weekly food, and relieving my brain of having to do the thinking part. I think that we overlook the amount of thinking that's involved in cooking for a family. And so if we can sort of get that all done in one go and just sort of say, okay, Monday we're having pork something and Tuesday we're having chicken something. And school lunches are also, I do that, the same thing for school lunches. I think that relieves us of a huge amount of the burden of it, if we look at it like that, which I do. I don't appreciate or certainly love turning around at 5 o'clock and cooking my food for the family. It's not my thing at all. But I do it because I think it's, you know, absolutely fundamental to our health. So once you've planned and then done your shopping, I think there are a few essential things in my kitchen that I've really benefited from. One is the slow cooker. Another is a juicer. I absolutely love juicing. And investing in some kitchen equipment that really helps you and makes you feel good. In the same way, I sort of look at it as, you know, in the same way as I might buy a dress, you know, that makes me feel good. Well, if I have a certain kitchen tool that makes me feel good, I think that's, you know, a really, and encourages me to cook, that makes me, that's a good investment. I'm really into batch cooking. I love the idea of it, systematizing your cooking and cooking in batches and then freezing. I'm a huge freezer. You have to have a freezer. Everybody has to have a freezer, I think. And then I systematize the school lunches by having a sort of menu. And I then have a bunch of, I organize it so that there is a list on my fridge with a bunch of sides. And my kids choose their sides from what we have. What's on the list and which is what we have in our house. And then I have a rotation of foods that I use as their sort of main course. And my kids go to school with thermoses. Thermoses are essential, I think, for quick, easy school lunches that are healthful because you can so often use leftovers from, you know, previous night's dinners. And you can give them things like soup and other, you know, good food like that. So I also buy my meat from the farmer about 3 times a year. I take a trek with a friend of mine and we go and get our beef and a pork. And just recently I've got some lamb, and that's a very cost-effective way to get your meat. And again, you'll need a freezer for that because obviously you need to freeze it over time, and it's good quality meat and it's relatively inexpensive compared to what you can get in the grocery store. So I think those would be my main pieces of advice.
Yeah, you know, I love it. And I just kind of want to emphasize that we're all like a little different. So I wanted to share, if it's okay, so, you know, some ways I'm similar and some ways I'm different in my own kitchen. Totally agree with like having the great pieces in your kitchen. You know, I just bought some nice new pans that I'm excited about. But those things are expensive. You don't have to buy it all at once. You know, you can, I still don't have a Vitamix. You know, there's certain things I still don't have. but, you know, I think as you get into cooking, I'm like you, Allison. I didn't, you know, 5 years ago I was not too excited about cooking. But now I'm much more excited about it because it's a creative process and I love that I can make food that's healthy and tastes good. So I think it's okay to give yourself permission to upgrade some things in your kitchen and learn to be your own chef. I'm a little different than you, and I sort of have more of like my own tribal knowledge of one, where I kind of know what we're out of, and I kind of think, I usually go to the store twice a week, and I kind of just think in terms of a pretty small chunk of time, and you know, like you, I think, okay, I need a few pieces of meat or fish for dinners. You know, I kind of construct in my head, and I also write a little list too. But it's funny, I used to go to like the jumbo when I didn't eat as well. I went to the jumbo store once a week, and I probably got more processed food and less fresh food. And it was like a long trip. You know, it's such a huge store, and now I go to like a small health food store and, you know, I just pop in for half an hour twice a week, and it actually feels to me better, and I definitely have fresher food that way. And yeah, I'm still kind of figuring out my meat. We've done a pig share once, and I'm pondering the freezer in the garage because we don't have one yet. So I think that's one of the most key pieces when you want to eat good quality meat is like learning how to learning how to get a big batch and where you're going to put it and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that's not to say it's difficult, but that's sort of what's the word? It's a little bit. It takes a little more research to figure out in your own local community where you can get a meat share, and you know we can't. Maybe you have some resources, Allison. I know there's some websites for across the country resources. I don't totally know how each person in their own local community can find those. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I do actually, because it's intimate. If you have no experience, I mean, it took me probably a year of thinking about it before I actually jumped in to doing that. And it was only because I discovered there was somebody in my school community, another mom, that did it. And she was the one that sort of taught me, because it's intimidating, really, and a little overwhelming. And so I do have a post on my blog, which is a guide to, you know, the first time buying of a share. And, you know, just things, just little things like, well, how am I going to get it home without it all going bad and things like that? Those are the sort of things that people are concerned about. And there's eatwild.com that will gives you a list of ranches all over the country that do grass-fed beef and things like that. And then I have a blog post on my blog, which is about how to do it, the questions to ask, and just filling in some questions that I had before I went, because those are the kinds of things that stop you from making those decisions to jump in and commit to buying from the farmer.
Yeah, I know. And one resource that I have found in my area is if you're already going to farmers markets in the summer, some of them have meat shares. Or, you know, we did get a CSA of vegetables delivered this year, and sort of it's kind of the looking around process out of it. You know, so that's one way to another way to kind of find resources is at your local farmers.
Yeah, and I think if you have friends or know of a CSA, they're often a good way to connect to the farmers too, just network a little. That's how I did it, by networking and asking some people.
Yeah, and it's such a beautiful way to buy meat, and you know, especially if you're using a slow cooker, which a lot of us are. You know, it goes very well in the slow cooker and makes life quite easy to just have it in your freezer and pop it in the slow cooker. So, and there's some good recipes books out there, right? There's a kind of paleo slow cooker. I don't know if that's the exact title. Book. I have a great book, Paleo Comfort Food, that I love, and I use the slow cooker sometimes. So there's definitely resources out there. Cool. Allison, we're running out of time here. I would love to just kind of tell people again how they can keep in touch with you. You obviously have a lot of resources on making healthy eating easier. So you want to just share again the name of your website and the name of your book and how to get to that?
Sure. The website is Paleo Non-Paleo, which is www.paleononpaleo.com. I have a Facebook page at Facebook.com/PaleoNonPaleo. You can also find me on Pinterest at Allison J. Golden. And my book is The Modern No-Nonsense Guide to Paleo, which is available on Amazon. If you just type in the name of me, my name, or the name of the book, then that will come up. And I think then that you can sign up for my list on my website, and you'll get a report about the mistakes people tend to make and how to avoid them when they are changing their eating habits. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/AllisonJGolden.
Cool. And I'm just looking at your book, you do have it in the paper version too, which I'm still kind of hooked on my paper books. So that's awesome.
Me too.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. This is a really fun conversation. I'm definitely going to spread the word that, you know, I'd love for people who are trying to figure out how to eat healthier to listen to this episode. And keep in touch with our community. Thanks so much.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. And just a heads up that next week we will have a really special show with best-selling author Isabella Wentz, author of Hashimoto's Thyroiditis, Finding the Root Cause. So definitely stay tuned for that. And I'm off to a fertility conference this weekend. We're in Canada, where I'm going to see lots of fun people and see a beautiful city in Vancouver there. And hope you have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.